What's up, guys? Matt Holliday here with my wife, Leslie, and welcome to Table 40, another edition of our podcast. Today, we have Steve and Lori Stenstrom. Steve is the head of professional athletes outreach, PAO, played in the NFL for 5 years, right, Steve? 5 years and then 2 years on a practice squad. I'm Wikipedia in this deal.
Yeah, that's good.
Played at Stanford, was an All-American at Stanford, still holds a lot of the passing records at Stanford, which is nice. Still have those. Lori was a swimmer at Stanford, correct?
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Okay. Yeah. So we are glad to have them on. They have tons of background with ministry and college ministry, which is something Leslie and I have kind of gotten into a little bit in the last year with some college ministry stuff here in Oklahoma. And so it's great to have you guys on. Can speak on a number of topics with parenting and marriage and all kinds of things. So we want to thank you guys for coming on. Appreciate having you guys on. And it's just special to have you guys with us.
And it's safe to say that they're probably some of our smartest friends.
No doubt.
Like Stanford education is pretty impressive.
Yeah, well, we had Rice last week with Lance and did Kara go to Rice?
No, she didn't.
Oh, well, right. Lance is smart too. Adam's high school education doesn't,
Well, it's your chance to school us up now. So it's great to be on with you.
Oh, we're excited. All right. Like, we first want to jump into college ministry. So we're kind of using this time to learn ourselves, honestly, because like Matt said, the last year, he's been volunteering at Oklahoma State University as their baseball coach. And we had this really cool opportunity to have a couple Bible studies at the house during the week. We have a girls study on Wednesday and a co-ed study on Sunday. And I just would love to hear how that happened for you guys, because we're a couple years behind you. And I love your story. I love, Lori, I love getting to know you a little bit more at the PAO conference. And just when we talked about college ministry, your eyes lit up and it's just part of your story. And I would love to hear how that came about for you guys. And it's a big decision to open your home and commit to college kids and kind of go with them on that journey.
Mm-hmm. Want me to start?
You go first. Kick it off.
Okay. Well, when Steve retired from the NFL, we took the next 6 months to just really pray through what the next step might be. And we were running in all kinds of different directions that were not back to the campus at Stanford. We just didn't see the Bay Area as the place we wanted to raise our family. We just were going different directions, but we felt not an audible voice from God, but a tug at our hearts, probably stronger than we've ever felt, that we both knew we were supposed to go into college ministry. And part of that stemmed from the fact that I was saved as a junior in high school, but really didn't have any follow-up after that, and kind of walked through my college days in a pretty secular manner. And I didn't have a mentor in my life and didn't have a college fellowship that I was a part of. Steve had the opposite, where he was plugged in right away and was mentored by two or three different men through his whole college experience. So we both were passionate about college ministry for different reasons, but we felt really called to. Do you want to tell them about the Bible study we were doing?
I think for us, part of our call into ministry goes back actually to the weekend that I was drafted and we began our kind of NFL career. It was actually, we were sitting next to my brother's bedside when he was in a coma, a spinal meningitis. And it's crazy to think that's 25 years ago, but at that time we knew that however long football lasted, however long God let us play, that part of our story after that was going to be investing in the things that ultimately matter most. And I think that sort of began to form a backdrop, because we were so grateful at that time that through a high school ministry, FCA, my brother had met Christ and he had made that decision that was so important. And so when we got done playing, we kind of stepped into that next chapter and realized that we began praying prayers that at least opened the door for God to speak in such a way that when the college ministry opportunity presented itself, it was easy for us to say yes. And we actually thought we were going to do it for the rest of our lives.
And then what happened? So we met you guys, obviously not in college. My grades were not good enough to go to Stanford. So I didn't meet there. I met you as a wife to Matt with professional athlete outreach. And so how did that transition happen?
Yeah, I'll start and you can jump in. But I think we were about 8.5 years into college ministry, and we had been a part of PAO ourselves back our rookie year with the Chicago Bears. We got plugged in through the team chaplain. He took us down to the conference that year. We fell in love with the ministry, and so we kept going, and we actually kept taking students that were part of our campus ministry. Even when we were doing campus ministry, they'd go on to play in the NFL, or we'd just say, "Hey, meet us at this conference in February." So we kept going and going, and so PAO stayed a huge part of our lives. And then when the previous president and his wife, Norman Bobby Evans, were stepping down after a long time of serving PAO, they were part of the first 40 years of the ministry. We were nominated to consider the opportunity to step into that role. And
they asked the whole board of directors to suggest people to fill the role. So we were busy suggesting other people and didn't realize everybody else was suggesting us. So it was kind of a funny.
Yeah. So like every step along the way, it was kind of, it always comes back to, it felt like the only obedient thing to do was to say yes. Stanford ministry felt like the obedient thing to do at the time. PAO, the opportunity, felt like the obedient thing to do at the time. And I think we had resolved ahead of time, got our answers yes. When you clarify what you want us to do, our answer is yes.
That's awesome.
I want to go back to the college ministry and, you know, specifically for us, like what were some of the good things, the pitfalls, kind of the things that really worked, maybe some things that didn't work with the college ministry and dealing with 18 to 22 year olds and kind of the 18 year old freshman is much different than the 22 year old senior who is, you know, maybe further along in their career and their life, you know, as far as what they're doing with their relationships and things like that.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. So the one thing is that I felt like the beauty of even having that 4-year age span is that the older ones do mentor the younger ones or not even that, it's the spiritually mature ones mentor the younger ones, but they all desire fellowship and community with each other. I think now more than ever, I think the young people today, we have 4 kids of our own who are, let's see, 17, 19, 20, and 22. And I think even more so now, they all just long for authentic relationship with each other. So having them in a home and being able to hang out in person, not on their phones, actually having real conversations that are really deep, that just is invaluable at this point. I mean, providing that experience. All of our kids are at schools that don't have homes near campus that they can go to and have that fellowship experience. So they're still doing it on campus. And if you can be in a home, I think it's something that's really invaluable. And food. You have to have food.
Always have food.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it was, it took me a little while to figure out how much things had shifted and changed since we'd been students. And so in many ways began to minister to and spend time with and mentor the young guys that I was meeting with, whether in one-on-one group settings or in group settings. Really, I needed the apologetics. I needed the kind of reasons for the faith. And that's where the hang up was for me. And I don't know if it was a generational thing or just a millennial thing or whatever it was. But when we started back doing campus ministry, there was so much more that was about being known, spending time, having authentic relationships. The head wasn't the issue. The heart was really the issue. And so taking students out into experiential situations, like Lori said, bringing them over to the house, just being around our family, welcoming them in and sharing life that way, it laid the foundation for, we couldn't even, just the other day, got a text message from one of the young cross country gals that was part of the ministry. And she's doing some flying high law thing now and so proud of her, what she's doing. But she just reached back out just to say she found some old pictures and was reflecting upon some of the times when she was a student on campus, mm-hmm. and it made such a big impact. And those stories keep coming up over and over and over again.
So. I just told Steve a minute ago, I just got off a call with IJM with a bunch of our athletes. And one of the athletes that was on the call was a face from our college ministry at Stanford, Sarah Hall. She's a professional runner. And I said, just to even see her face on the Zoom call was so fun because I haven't seen her for years. But yeah, I, like Steve said, those authentic relationships, but we also did something else. We organized community service projects with our kids, and to the point that we actually established a foundation called Second Mile that we just shut down about a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
And we did extreme home makeovers on homes in the community and for marginalized families or to support Christian ministries in the area. And wow, we had no idea the impact that that would have on their hearts and bringing people in the community together with our college athletes. I mean, those relationships they have with each other still to this day are so phenomenal. So that was actually something that was a great idea.
That's a great idea. And I think something you said, Steve, that I just want to sort of draw out, and I think it's a very important thing for people listening to this that might be interested or are in ministry or interested in pursuing ministry, is you said that there was a big shift. Like, it wasn't so much head knowledge, but it was heart knowledge. And I think that understanding kind of what the barrier is with the group of people that you're ministering to is very valuable, and it can really, really save a lot of time. And so what kind of practical things did you do? Or I guess, what was your strategy in determining, oh man, they aren't like me. They're just a little bit different than me. This is a heart thing. This isn't a head thing. And so I think that's important. And I think that, sometimes we can go down a track with the people that God's allowed in our circle that, and we might be teaching them things and they're like, what in the world? I don't care about that at all. I'm terrible at asking questions. I'm learning as I go that, podcasting is hard because you have to. So I don't know exactly what my question is, but I do know what I'm trying to ask, I guess, is how long did it take you to figure out that your group of people that were in your home were just a little bit different than you, and their way to understanding Jesus was not so much apologetics head stuff, but it was heart and being known. And
That's a really good question. You're really good at the podcast thing. I think probably way longer than it should have taken. Very slow learner, probably pretty stubborn with my approach for a long time. But I don't know, I think we all sort of presume upon situations what our background and experience prepares us for. And we're really well served if we take time to actually study and get to know and observe rather than rush right in and assume we have the right solution. So I think for me, it was kind of realizing that today's young people, they're so smart. They're so well studied. They've been trained in school. They have all the answers. And so if you're just presenting them, I mean, facts are important. The reasons for our faith are critical. Foundation of our faith is as reliable and trustworthy and as sound as anything as that's out there. But if you're just going to bring them an intellectual level conversation, they have a lot of questions and objections that they might find a parallel for. But if you bring them an authentic relationship, if you put them in the context of authentic relationships, the difference in the quality of those relationships will show up, and it won't even be close. And they're going to be drawn into wanting more and more. And they don't even know why necessarily, but they're going to keep coming back.
Well, and I would add too, that they're not necessarily looking for another opportunity to be talked to or talked at. They want to interact with each other, and they want to interact with you. And so just to put them in settings and environments where they have the opportunity to express their opinion, their dissenting view, whatever it might be, and just know that it's a safe environment, they really want to voice their concerns, and they don't just want to be talked at.
Yeah, absolutely. That's good.
So shifting gears a little bit, Steve, I'm sure you remember, but I don't remember exactly what meeting it was, but something that really is stuck out to Leslie and I in the last 6 months, maybe it's been 6 months, when you said, all that matters is this day and that day, and you gave us that talk, that kind of stuck out to us. And that's something that we've kind of kicked back and forth in how we live our lives, and something that we're trying to instill in our kids, especially in this time where there's a lot of uncertainty and people don't know kind of how to handle this and trying to live this more day to day. But can you talk a little bit about that and that, like I said, had a profound effect on us, and I'm sure it would others.
Mm. Yeah, I appreciate that. I heard it said one time, I think it was a mentor of mine once said that there's only 2 days on God's calendar. There's today and there's that day. And so, and sort of give some context to it. Two passages in particular come to mind. Psalm 90, Moses is talking about, teach us, Lord, to number our days, right, that we might gain a heart of wisdom. So we do live in this interesting point in life where we have a certain number of days. They're governed by God. We don't get to determine them. He does. But they're each 24 hours long. And that's kind of the great equalizer of life. And then Paul in 1 Corinthians, there's several places that talk about that day that's coming, the day that we'll eventually stand before God and we'll sort of know how we did. It'll be an accounting a little bit. And so how do I live today, every day? How do I live today in light of that day is sort of the ultimate question we must ask. I mean, Paul kind of says it this way. He says that he's talking about church leaders, but the principle applies for our lives as well. He says there's one foundation that anybody can have. The only foundation to have is Jesus and him alone. And then we've got to better be very careful how we build on that foundation as time goes along, because the day is coming and it'll test the quality of each person's work and it'll be shown for what it is. And so that's kind of an interesting way to think in terms of, yeah, how do we do ministry with college kids? How do we raise our own kids? How do we think about our own lives? Ultimately boiling down to what's truly going to matter is what happens on that day. So how do I wake up each morning and say, God, help me to live this day in light of that day?
Oh, I loved it. I mean, that really made a difference in my life for sure. And Matt and I've talked, he said that, we've talked about it an awful lot. And I think it just adds value to the mundane because, you know, I mean, Matt played professional sports for a long time. You guys have experienced that. And so there are a lot of fun days whenever you're married to a professional athlete. You get to go to fun games and you get to travel and you get to do lots of really cool things. But there are also, now that he's not playing any longer, there have been more normal days, so to speak. And that to me was just so timely when you said that, because the busyness of our life is kind of, it's just not what it was. And so for us to understand, like, man, it is so important to the Lord that we really take advantage of the breath that he gives us and the time that he gives us. And this day really, really, really matters. And it's an opportunity to invest in the day that's coming for all of us, where we stand in front of Jesus. And so I am so grateful for that devotional. I believe it was during a leadership meeting. So it was good.
How much more we're all experiencing that right now, right? Yeah, I just had a conversation yesterday with all of our kids, and I just said, we've been doing this now for what, 8 weeks? And it's just time. I don't want you to just wait until it's time to go back to college or start practice again. And we need to wake up every day looking forward to what we can do today to be a blessing to somebody else. And let's not just keep looking forward to the next thing, because we just don't know how many days we get. And you can just go through these mundane days and just wish for the next, for the future to come, for the circumstances to change. But that this might be all we have. And that would just be such a loss.
Speaking of children, I was thinking your kids are obviously a little bit older than ours, but what are some practical ways, good and things that haven't worked as well with raising kids, raising men, raising women of God, that have been effective, and maybe some that haven't. I know we've tried a few that have not been, and especially in this quarantine, there's been some
rough days.
Rough days.
We've all had those days. Yeah.
So give us some wisdom for us and anybody that might be listening to this, some a few years ahead of us and maybe further ahead of some listeners. But what are some parenting, Steve, you raising men and you, Lori, raising women of God? Like, what are some ways, some practical ways maybe that have been effective for your family?
You want me to go?
Sure.
Yeah. Well, there's so many, I'm with you. There's a lot of the todays that we've just experienced that I kind of hoping God forgets along the way. We wish we could do a do-over on that day. But I think, you know, parenting, marriage, I don't know. I think not losing sight that the little small deposits, the daily installments, the truly leaning into the moments that we get and not spending so much time trying to create the moments, just live in the moment, be ready, because you can't ever really predict when that little window is going to open and there's going to be an opportunity with your kid, with your son, with your daughter, to just speak into their world in a way, because God's writing this script in their life. And we always like to say he writes the best scripts. That's one of our sort of taglines. God always writes the best scripts. So how do we lean into the script, not as the authors of the script, but just a participant in the script that's being written for our kids? And I think that's part of it, is just every day showing up and just being present in their lives, and don't lose sight of those little installments make a huge difference. We'll just be shocked all the time. We're sitting around the table and the kids will remember something. To us, it was maybe very small or insignificant, but to them, it was actually super memorable. So it can feel mundane, but it's actually memorable.
Well, and it's about that quality time, you know, and the quantity time. It's not either or. And I think, you know, moms get a free pass out there because moms just, they're mostly with their kids. And so we do spend, and it's just innate to who we are to just be with the kids and pour into the kids. There's a lot of dads out there who choose to go a different way and who maybe are nervous about it or don't think they're great at parenting. And so they kind of run to work to be where they're the star. They're really good at it. And the one thing that I would say, it's so sweet to be on the other end, not on the other end of parenting. We're certainly not done yet, but our kids are older. And to see the relationship that each one of them have with both of us, and to know that, I'll give Steve a ton of credit here. He chose our family and our children over everything else. Even, it's just been amazing. But the deposits that he put into their lives, I mean, the dad factor is huge. And that doesn't mean that if you're a single mom out there, that it's a lost cause. And I think that's a super important thing to point out, because you plus God is enough. And we know that. And God is, you know, is the ultimate in filling in any and all gaps. But when there is a dad involved, it is just, I would just encourage all the dads out there, just don't underestimate the power that you have and the impact that you can have in the long term for your kids, spending that quality time with them.
And I might add one more thing to that too, because I think we actually decided a long time ago, if we're going to have one family rule, it was going to be always have fun. And it's kind of seems silly, seems trivial, might seem like, where's your chapter and verse for that one, Bible guy? But it's like, you know, at the end of the day, somebody shared with me one time, like if you ask a kid about school, what's the most important part about school, they'll say recess or lunch break or whatever it is. If you ask the parent what the most important part is, they'll say math class, English class. And like there's a curricular component and there's an extracurricular component. And so for us as parents, not to forget how important the extracurricular is, because that's what makes them remember the curricular. So we tried to just sort of surround the family activities in fun so that there would be teaching moments and it wouldn't feel like it was this, let me pull that tooth out moment or make sure we teach this lesson right now. The lessons just sort of happened because it kind of happened in process of having fun.
Yeah. They have a little credibility with each other. Yeah. That's awesome. All right. I have to ask you about swimming, Lori. So I know you coach swimming and it's probably interesting sometimes in your home because you've coached some of your daughters, right? Or just one is all of them. All daughters. Mm-hmm. So Matt's a son of a coach as well. And so anyway, I know some of those dinners are probably interesting, but I am a secret fan of swimming. So when I was a little gal, I would go down and watch my cousins. They swam in Austin. And then my cousin Martha ended up marrying this guy named Brendan, who was an Olympic swimmer. So I'm kind of into the sport. I really, really like it. But as I was running and I was praying about this conversation with you guys, one of the things I thought about was, and you can explain swimming better than me, you're the expert, I am not. But what I find fascinating about the sport is you work really, really, really hard. And then you're ready for your race day and you can make just one little bitty mistake and you're immediately disqualified from the race. You no longer count. It's over. And all your work is just gone. And it's just very intense to watch the sport. I don't know how in the world you did it. But I was thinking about that. And sometimes I think that there can be a parallel drawn with a lot of people's walk with Jesus is they feel like they're going to get in this race and they're going to go, but if they screw up, then they're disqualified. And I think that there's a myth out there that says that that's how the Christian journey is that there's no room for error. And it's kind of like a swimmer, like your race doesn't count if you don't do it well. And so I would love for you to expand on my lack of knowledge of swimming and like what you think about that and what you think about my thoughts as I'm running. Is this a good idea to use later or not? And so, anyway, but I would love to hear what you have to say about that.
Well, it's fun even just to hear a non-swimmer talk about it because it's something that's so innate to me that you realize, wow, that doesn't happen in other sports where you don't get disqualified.
It don't count.
Yeah, it doesn't count. So that's interesting. I hadn't thought about it like that, but it is really true. And I feel like that's part of my testimony too, is I went through a huge piece of my young life believing that the mistakes that I had made and the bad choices that I had made disqualified me for service from God, for God. And that is something that it was John Piper at the Passion Conference, you know, years ago that we were invited to as adults. And I, even though my head knew that it wasn't true that I was disqualified for service from, you know, doing things for God because of choices that I had made, it took me hearing him as an adult to remember that that's one of Satan's greatest deceptions, is he wants us to believe that, because that immediately makes us shut down and walk away from the race and say, well, I'm out of it and I don't count. But that's just not true. And so I had to realize that Jesus had forgiven me, but I hadn't forgiven myself. But in doing that, I was not living to my full potential and to what God called me to do, because I was still holding myself in unforgiveness. But that's also saying that what Jesus did on the cross wasn't enough. And when somebody kind of presented me with that reality, that was enough to make me finally realize the error of my ways.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I just think too, you know, back to my amazing swimming analogy, I think that like as a coach and you've probably, this has probably happened even to your daughters. I mean, they've screwed up, but I mean, what's the next thing that you tell them? I mean, the next thing isn't like, you know what, go find something else to do. The next thing is like, we're going to keep working at this and this probably isn't going to happen again or something. And I just think as I read scripture, especially the letters that Paul wrote throughout the Bible, it just seems to be a theme in his writing is like, you will mature, press on, like, forget about some of this stuff that's behind you. I mean, it happened, there's consequence of our sin and there's shame involved. And there's all these things that are going to be a consequence of things that we've done in our past. But there's also, because of the cross, exactly what you were talking about, there is forgiveness and there is this opportunity as believers to press on and move forward in maturity. And I mean, it's the sanctification process that we get to be a part of. But I just don't want people to feel like if they feel this urge to be called to ministry or even to follow the Lord, I just never want them to think that they're disqualified from the opportunity to serve or the opportunity to receive grace and forgiveness and the opportunity to have a relationship with the Lord because of things in their past.
Absolutely. And I think it's important to remember, I mean, any basic Bible study can teach you that God uses broken people. And there's nobody in the Bible that was a fabulous person that God used in an amazing way. I mean, the majority of people that he used were just like you and I. And, you know, in your swimming analogy, it is so true, though. You do get disqualified a lot when you're young. And as you train harder and perfect your technique and mature, it doesn't happen often at all. And as Christians, that's the goal, right? That we don't just keep sinning, that we let the Holy Spirit convict us, that we turn and repent. And then we make those mistakes less as we go, and we're still not perfect. But yes, to your point, God uses broken people all the time. Praise God for that. Just need a t-shirt, saved by grace.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Okay, before we end here, we have to ask, like, I think three things we want to talk about. We want to talk about a little marriage advice, because you guys have been married. How long have you guys been married?
25 years.
How did you meet? I don't even know this story.
We met in class. Well, I saw her in class. And we didn't meet till afterwards because I was terrified. And that's for a different time, a different story. There's a sort of a, you know, okay stalking story involved in this conversation that one day we'll have to unpack. But we eventually talked and we met on campus in a industrial engineering class.
Yeah.
Oh, of course.
Of course you did. Yeah. Not a communications or marketing class. Oh, gracious. Oh, great. So then you guys have been married 20-some years. 25 years. I thought, yeah, 25 years. Matt and I have been married. It'll be 20 years in December. Awesome. It goes by fast. And so what would give us some great marriage advice? It could be anything, really.
Yeah. Well, I think early on, one of the things we said is we weren't going to compare ourselves to other people. And it seems so simple, but that's something that has been a huge principle for us, is what works for us works for us. And you can't take bits and pieces of somebody else's marriage, somebody else's family. And we just don't compare ourselves to other people. So we spend a ton of time together. And we spend so much time together. And this is my best friend. And I mean, I never get tired of him. You're awesome. But don't compare yourself to other people, because it just, what works for you works for you. And the quality time you spend together, it's just like we were talking about with your kids. You just can't replace that.
Yeah. And I think ultimately, I mean, our priorities become obvious over time. And so we, if we lean into the priority that God places upon marriage, and we start to align our calendars and our lives and our conversations and our willingness to just, I mean, it's an amazing laboratory. It's very, you become, realize how selfish you are really quickly in a relationship like this, this close. But it just allows you, like, in that kind of laboratory to work it all out. And it's in the most trusted place imaginable. But it takes time, and it really does take time. I remember hearing it actually at a PAO conference not long before I stepped into this role at PAO. The person was talking, he's kind of a marriage psychologist, talking about there's actually a me to we process that happens in marriage. And it usually takes around years 10 to 12 before a couple really moves from me to we. And so I think even just starting to, like, train yourself to use language, don't use I language or me language, use we language or our language, and start to just process those rhythms and habits that make it very, very natural, like breathing, that, as God says, two have become one. It's a mystery. We don't understand it, but that's kind of what he said. So ultimately, time is the variable that plays out. And so the sooner we lean into that, the more headaches we save ourselves along the way. But it takes work. It takes effort. And but we've had a great journey for a quarter century now.
Well, and I think just remembering you're on the same team. I mean, I know that sounds, you know, trite. I don't know. You're on the same team. So sometimes you're mad, but not at each other, but you end up taking it out on each other because that's the person that's right in front of you. But at the end of the day, you're on the same team. You're pulling in the same direction. And we talk about everything. We just talk it out. And so communication has been a great strength for us. Mm-hmm. And we just talk it out. Like, it doesn't mean we have to talk about it in that instant. I'm not actually one that thinks you can't go to bed angry, because sometimes you just need to go to bed. You know, you just go sleep it off and everything looks real weird in the morning. So, you know, again, it's not like we've just followed these like perfect biblical principles, but it works for us. We just talk about it and remember that we're in this together and we're on the same team. And we have so much fun together and we laugh at ourselves all the time. And our family, you asked about our kids earlier, but they're hilarious. They are hilarious human beings. And we just laugh so much in our family, but they delight in their first choice is to be with us and to be with each other. And that's just such a gift.
Oh, that is good. That's good. All right. My last, and I know we've got to get going here, but our last question is, so we had a very disappointing sports injury the other day. And so Ethan broke his wrist. He's our 13-year-old. He broke his wrist on a weird four-wheeler accident. And he was just really, he was devastated because baseball season was about to start. And then he also broke his other wrist during football season. So this year has been really rough for our big guy. And it was fascinating. There were two things that were interesting about it. Number one was watching him handle it was really inspiring to me. And I think oftentimes our kids teach us so much more than we give them credit for.
Amen.
And I was so proud of him. I mean, some of the way he handled it was just really, really cool. And I was really proud of him. I guess my question would be, is you guys have a whole house full of athletes and you have a son-in-law, right? That is also a professional athlete. And how many times have you had to just sit there just not knowing what to do as a parent and like grieving in their disappointment, but also understanding like, okay, there's a bigger picture here, but how do you do? I mean, that was very hard for me because when they're little, they're hurt and you're kind of like, you'll be fine. You know, it's going to be okay. But then when they get older and they start to understand it, it just, there was something about it that ripped my heart out. So, I mean, I know y'all have gone through that.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, have we?
So many times.
Well, and you realize as they get older, those stakes just keep getting.
Oh my gosh.
Higher. Yeah. Yeah. It, you know, from the beginning, we taught our kids, you know, swimming is what you do. It's not who you are. Football is what you do. It's not who you are. And we set it to the point of nauseam. Now you can say that as parents, and then you can watch them live differently. And it's tough when most of the time that you spend is going to practices and, you know, everything that goes into it. So when your words and your schedule have that, you know, interesting dichotomy going on, but it was really fascinating. Each one of them have had an injury, a significant injury in college mostly,
mm-hmm.
where the stakes were really high and really big and you are heartbroken. And to listen to our kids preach to us and just come right back out with that perspective that we taught them since they were tiny was something that has been a gift to us. And just realizing that don't ever get tired of speaking that truth into them and don't ever veer away from that truth. Because when it becomes your identity, the crisis is so big when that's taken away. I mean, there's so many athletes that are feeling that right now. But that's just... But I think as a parent, it's so natural to grieve in some ways worse on us than it is on them. You realize they're pretty resilient. And if you can put yourself into their shoes, you'd probably be handling it better than you are as a parent. It's just so hard. You're so protective.
Yeah.
I think I would add, coming back to a couple of points we've already made. One was the swimming question made me think we don't even know how deeply embedded in our lives and culture, performance-based kind of mentality is, and we truly don't have a parallel for grace. And so to try to think about that identity question as I'm not what I do, but I am who I am, that's an amazing opportunity to try to keep embedding that. And you do find out how well you've done it certain times along the way. But it's so true and it's so real. And if you have laid those building blocks in their lives, they'll come back and they'll preach to you along the way. Another thing I would say, is it comes back to what I said earlier about God writes the best scripts. And we've so many times believed we knew what the right script was for our kids, convinced of it. And then it's almost like the manuscript got torn up in front of us. And you're like, wait, that can't possibly not be the outcome here. I mean, they put so much work in, or they've done all this, or they've done all that. And you realize how deeply still embedded in me and in us, we believe this sort of, if I do all the right inputs and I hit the enter button on the other side of the equal sign is going to be something that we've been planning for and we've been writing for. And then it's kind of taken away and you go, wow, what now? And then you give enough time to go by and you see what now is and you go, oh, that's better than what I had in mind. But it's usually in the rearview mirror that comes out.
And even to watch just recently, our oldest daughter just graduated from Stanford and was a part of a 3-time national championship team. And she had some injuries she dealt with in college and some disappointments that were huge because she went in as one of the top recruits in the country. And to sit there and listen at her senior luncheon, listen to her teammates giving speeches about who she is, And the role that she found on that team that was very different than the role that she saw herself and we saw happening for her when she first got there, it was such a gift from God, because she herself stood up and gave a speech, and there wasn't a dry eye in the room as she said, "Mommy and Daddy, you taught me from the beginning that swimming was what I do and not who I am. And that gave me the freedom to enjoy it and to pour into other people and to not, you know, live or die by every race." And it was so sweet to hear those words come out of her mouth, and to listen to her teammates talk about the impact that she's had on them as people and as a godly woman in a very secular environment. It was pretty amazing. It was a different script, but it was than the one we saw, but it was a much better script.
That's real encouraging. That's awesome.
Well, we thank you guys for coming on, and you guys are still the smartest friends that we have. Yeah. So congratulations.
I can remind Lance of that when you talk to him.
No, actually, we're
I don't know.
I'm
about to see you fill out a crossword puzzle, Steve. I've seen Lance fill it in pretty quick. You know,
about Sudoku or whatever. Yeah. Exactly.
But we really appreciate you guys coming on and sharing a lot of your experience and knowledge. And we're grateful for your friendship and your leadership and just coming on with us. And
One last thing, because okay. You said leadership, and I think that this is important. And then we'll finally let you close.
You can wrap it up.
Since we have you guys on here, we have to ask this question. So Matt and I've talked a lot about leadership over his career, because it's really interesting. And Matt's had a lot of interesting managers with lots of different personalities, and we've been a part of boards or whatever. And your leadership's really unique, Steve, because it is very kind, but you're obviously incredibly intelligent. But I think one thing I really respect about you, and I would like to kind of understand kind of how this happened, but one thing I really respect from you is you're kind of an open-handed leader, to where you ask people questions, and I don't think you're really asking them because you're just trying to be polite. I really think that you're learning from people when you ask questions. And I really respect that, because I kind of think that some of the greatest leaders are the ones that don't think they have it all figured out, but hold firm to what they believe, but are also willing to learn from a lot of people. And I'm just curious, is that kind of an innate thing, or did you learn that from somebody? Or I'm just asking, just in case I want to get involved in anything and be a leader, because I think it's so smart. And anyway, I would ask me the last thing I promised that we'll talk about, but I do think it's really important.
Well, I mean,
you are a great leader.
I'm grateful for you to say that. I don't know. I think I like to reflect. I like to listen. I do think there's amazing value in having better questions than you do answers. And so I think words are really important. I don't like pat answers. I don't like giving just something that almost like people expect you to give, because I want to have it be thought out. And it's probably because I'm also a verbal processor. So even right now, as I'm talking, I'm kind of thinking as you ask that question. But I think reasoning is a lost art in our culture. We've become such a soundbite culture that we're so quick to just, in 140 characters, give me your thought, you know. And it's like, well, it takes so much more than that. So at some level, you've got to believe there's a collective wisdom in a group. And you've really got to believe that the group is better, and every individual in the group is better because of the group. And so how do you draw that out? You try to learn to ask good questions. So no question that. And then I would say the other part of just from my own personal growth over time, and I don't know how this ultimately gets back to your question about leadership, but it ties into the conferences that we see each other at, you know, a couple times a year, the Increase conferences. That to me, the downward arrow of the self-decrease is way more important than the upward arrow of Christ's increase. And that's just true to scripture. That's true the way it plays out. But it's almost like I just try to, over time, wanted to test that principle out more and more. And the more that I've leaned into, God, I want to decrease in this moment that you might increase, the more it's almost like a, like this, you know, addictive substance or something that I'm like compelled to want more of. And so I try to do that. I've learned to try to do that more and more in settings. And I just hope that plays out in our family, because it's so much easier to come, like I said, with the answers than with questions.
That's good. All right. We'll finally let you go. Matt and I think you're a great team. Lori, thank you so much for all of that.
Well, we love you guys.
Think the same about you guys. Thanks for doing Table 40. This is great.
Thanks. Yeah, but thanks for having us, for coming on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Appreciate it.
Yeah, we love y'all. Thank you so much.
All right. See you guys later. Bye.